Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, July 20th, 2023. Sheriff's Department Budgets for Additional North County Deputy by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. At last week's meeting, the Presidio County Commissioner's Court approved a slot in next year's budget for an additional deputy serving the northern half of the county. The position would round out the number of full-time Presidio County Sheriff's Office PCSO employees on patrol to 7, including County Sheriff Danny Dominguez. Chief Deputy Joel Nunez kicked off the discussion about the new deputy in March when he asked the commissioners to use money already in the PCSO budget to temporarily create a deputy position through the end of the fiscal year. The commissioners approved his request, but needed to revisit the issue before the FY24 budget was completed. In 2015, the Commissioner's Court voted to add a deputy to the southern half of the county. The plan had always been to add an additional deputy up north, but that idea stalled after the Marfa Police Department, whose duties were covered by contract with the PCSO from 2007 to 2017, was reestablished. In March, Nunez explained that the three deputies patrolling the southern half of the county were often called to help assist in customs and border protection operations. "We have a lot of activity on the border. It's increasing," Nunez said. "We want someone to cover more of the normal duties of a deputy: citizen complaints, highway patrol, community presence." At last week's meeting, Nunez doubled down on his observations about the strain placed on the department. He also explained that the North County deputies patrol a wider area than just Marfa. The more remote reaches of the county, along Casa Piedra and Pinto Canyon roads. If you do the math, two deputies providing 24/7 coverage to Marfa is pretty difficult, he said. PCSO Secretary Shanna Elmore explained that there are two additional deputies patrolling the county through Operation Stone Garden, a federal grant program for law enforcement in local governments along the border. Those deputies can't help with the normal duties detailed by Nunez. Stone Garden duties are mostly to serve the border initiative and provide support to U.S. Border Patrol when needed, she said. At last week's meeting, the commissioners voted to approve the PCSO's application for the next round of Operation Lone Star funding. Operation Lone Star functions like Operation Stone Garden on the state level, providing funding to law enforcement in border counties in Texas. If approved, $87,360 of state money would go toward deputy salaries. The new North County deputy position, separate from the Operation Stone Garden and Operation Lone Star deputies, will be filled by a familiar face for many. PCSO Precinct 1 Constable Stephen Marquez will serve as full-time deputy. Marquez resigned from his position as chief of the Marfa Police Department in March, but stated that he would still keep his post at the sheriff's office. The county's assistant auditor, Alicia Sanchez, explained that because Marquez was already on the county's insurance payroll, the immediate impact to next year's budget would be around $54,000. Staff photo by Allegra Hobbs. Community members gathered at the Van Horn Convention Center on Thursday evening for an informational meeting on the Saguaro Connector Pipeline, a planned natural gas pipeline that would come within roughly a mile of town. In Van Horn, some locals begin to mobilize against planned pipeline by Allegra Hobbs, Allegra at BigBentSentinel.com. Van Horn. Dozens of community members gathered Thursday at the Van Horn Convention Center to learn more about a planned natural gas pipeline that would come within roughly a mile of city limits, a development some fear may endanger their community and negatively impact their quality of life. One Oak, O-N-E-O-K, Incorporated's Saguaro Connector Pipeline would span 155 miles of the Waha Hub in Pecos County to the U.S.-Mexico border at Hudspeth County, where it would then transport natural gas under the Rio Grande for international export from Mexico. It would have the capacity to transport 2.834 billion standard cubic feet of natural gas per day. The proposed pipeline's intrastate journey before crossing the border takes it through Reeves, Jeff Davis, Culberson, and Hudspeth counties. Concerns about environmental impacts and the disruption of archaeological sites, namely the Indian Hot Springs site, have already been raised by West Texans. But the pipeline's proximity to the town of Van Horn in Culberson County was a dominant topic of discussion at last week's meeting, where some locals were learning details of the project for the first time. Some shouted their objections during the meeting, wondering aloud why they'd been unaware of the project. The meeting was hosted by activist groups, including the Property Rights and Pipeline Center and Earthworks, who expounded on the potential negative impacts of such a project: harmful emissions, and even ruptures and explosions. Lawyers were on hand to explain landowners' rights to those whose property is in the path of the pipeline, a situation in which the pipeline company is able to assert eminent domain. Yard signs and bumper stickers protesting the pipeline were laid out on a table for attendees to take home. Van Horn native Cody Davis, local emergency planning committee chairman for the county, expressed concern about emergency preparedness in the small, fairly remote town. "If all goes according to plan and the necessary permits are issued, One Oak aims to begin construction next year, with plans for the pipeline to be fully operational in 2025. Davis is tasked with writing emergency plans for the county, a lengthy process he fears he will be unable to complete in time for the pipeline's construction. "I have less than a year to write a plan that's going to involve people's lives and property," he said. "We've got a sheriff's department that's got six deputies and the sheriff," he said. "We don't have the capabilities. We don't have the resources. We just don't." Davis said he plans to oppose the pipeline's construction near Van Horn. His cousin, Manuela Carrasco, said she would do everything within her power to oppose the project. She said she feared the adverse health effects of emissions. Her husband has asthma, she said, and suffers from kidney disease. "I'm worried about the effects of it, the possible effects of it," she said. "I'm not to the point where I'm going to be panicking, but at the same time, I don't need to tempt that as a fate. We don't need to play around." A recent report from Inside Climate News and the Texas Tribune revealed that West Texas natural gas operators were releasing tons of excess emissions into the air amid the June heat wave. In response to a request for comment regarding community concerns, One Oak spokesperson Brad Barrer stated that the company is committed to the safe and reliable operation of our pipelines in the communities where we operate. The company is currently awaiting approval from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, to construct the border facilities necessary to transport the natural gas beneath the Rio Grande. That two-part permitting process, seeking FERC authorization and a presidential permit, applies only to the roughly 1,000 feet of pipeline that crosses the border. Borer said that the FERC process includes a forum for stakeholders to provide input and that impacted landowners had been contacted by the company. But most of the pipeline, all but the 1,000 feet under review by FERC, falls entirely within the state of Texas, thus falling under the jurisdiction of the Texas Railroad Commission. The intrastate portion of the pipeline does not require approval or permitting from the federal government. Towards the end of the meeting, one attendee stood up and asked if they had a chance at opposing the pipeline's presence near their community. Lori Simmons, an organizer with the Property Rights and Pipeline Center, noted that upwards of 50 people were in the convention center that evening. "Y'all are not a small group," she said. "This is a large group, and y'all are loud." Court proceedings continue for Marfa locals facing charges relating to child sex abuse material. By Mary Cantrell, mkcantrell at bigbendsentinel.com. Marfa. Patricio Javier P.J. Serrano, a Marfa resident who was arrested in May and charged with possession of child sex abuse material, was indicted Monday on an additional count of transportation of child sex abuse material. A federal grand jury found that in addition to possession, Serrano was aiding and abetting another, did knowingly transport child pornography, according to the superseding indictment. Transportation, as defined by the courts, includes transport by electronic means. Serrano, 35, was in a previous romantic partnership with Marfa resident Sonia Murillo, 32, who was arrested in June and indicted on 4 counts of production and 1 count of distribution of child sex abuse material. Serrano was a coach with the Big Bend Amateur Softball Association, and Murillo was a Marfa ISD substitute teacher. So far, the defendants' cases have played out separately in the courts, and it is unclear whether the cases are related. The U.S. Attorney's Office declined to comment on the matter. Both the possession and transportation counts Serrano is being charged with have a maximum of 20 years imprisonment. Serrano was in possession of child sex abuse material involving a prepubescent female child, according to court documents. Serrano, who previously pleaded not guilty, will now have the option to either enter into a plea deal or go to trial. The plea deadline and a potential trial date have been pushed back and are set for August and September, respectively. "We're reviewing the evidence and the charges and deciding how best to proceed forward," said Serrano's attorney, Shane O'Neill. Murillo, who was arrested after investigators with the Texas Department of Public Safety uncovered video evidence of her performing sexual acts on a young child while conducting a forensic review of a cell phone from a different child pornography investigation in Marfa, according to the criminal complaint, pleaded not guilty earlier this month. She will now either enter into a plea deal or go to trial. Murillo waived her right to a bond hearing and did not appear at her arraignment. Murillo's lawyer, Bart Medley, declined to comment on the case. The Texas Department of Public Safety has not responded to requests for comment on the status of the investigations. Both Serrano and Murillo are being held without bond at the West Texas Detention Facility in Sierra Blanca. PISD updates district safety plan, creates mental health coordinator position. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio. At last week's meeting, Presidio ISD Police Chief Joel Nunez gave a presentation to the school board about the district's safety protocols, with a special emphasis on mental health. In the wake of a school gun violence epidemic, the state has put more stringent regulations in place, but Nunez wanted the district to go above and beyond. Nunez began with the brief outline of the school's emergency management plan. Whenever there's a shakeup in school leadership, the document must be reviewed and new signatories added. This year, the district saw the resignation of the superintendent and the middle school principal, as well as the reassignment of the high school principal. The emergency management plan provides a blueprint for the district to follow in the wake of a wide range of emergencies, everything from bomb threats and chemical spills to bullying. Once the threat has been identified, the document provides easy-to-follow steps customized to Presidio ISD leadership and local coordinating agencies. Citing safety concerns, Nunez said that the document would not be available online, but would be available to any concerned parent or community member requesting it. "We're always trying to be transparent," he said, "but we can't give the bad guys a play-by-play on how we do things." Nunez then announced that the district would be creating a position for a full-time, district-wide mental health coordinator funded by federal grant money. In the wake of numerous school shootings around the country, school safety experts, as well as the Texas Education Agency, had come to see offering mental health resources as a form of emergency prevention. Instead of having campus-specific counselors who serve other roles in teaching and administration, this position would be solely dedicated to mental health care, lending students a sympathetic ear, and connecting them with clinical resources if needed. Most importantly, the district mental health coordinator would be able to watch out for red flags signaling destructive behavior, and to continue keeping tabs on individual students to make sure their needs are adequately addressed. "We need someone who can keep tabs on each child," Nunez said. The coordinator would also be available to serve teachers and staff members dealing with difficult situations and mental health crises. "Teachers have needs and need to talk to somebody sometimes," he said. Nunez explained that many districts are opting for online resources and programs, but felt that having someone available to students and staff in person would be indispensable. "I personally don't think having online-only resources was acceptable," he said. Presidio has always been ahead. Ultimately, the goal was to be several steps ahead rather than waiting for an emergency to happen. "If we take proactive measures on mental health, it could prevent a situation like Uvalde," Nunez said. School Board President Iris Galindo expressed her support, both for the program and for generating more conversations about mental health within the district. "It's great to encourage our students and staff to communicate if we see anything," she said. Fate of Bright Ranch awaits judge's ruling as opposing motions are filed. By Allegra Hobbs, Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa, nearly a month after a Presidio County jury found that Bright Ranch manager Jim White had breached his fiduciary duty as trustee of the family trust, the questions at the heart of the case, whether Jim will be removed from the position he has held for over a decade, and whether a trust modification will allow the sale of the ranch land, remain unanswered as each party pulls for differing visions of the estate's future ahead of a final judgment. The legal battle concerning the historic Bright Ranch and its handling began in 2018 when Mac and Bo White sued their brother Jim for breach of fiduciary duty, alleging that he acted as trustee in ways that benefited him and his family while neglecting to generate income for trust beneficiaries, including themselves. The jury verdict rendered in June largely favored Mac and Bo, finding in part that Jim owes Mac and Bo $3 million in damages because the breach of duty had been intentional or fraudulent, and that he owes the Jane White Trust $1 million. But the case isn't over. Judge Melvin Rex Emerson has yet to enter a final judgment, and opposing parties are now shooting their shots in hopes of swaying the outcome. Last week, attorneys filed opposing motions for the judge's consideration. On Tuesday, they presented oral arguments at a hearing held over Zoom. The plaintiffs filed a motion for the entry of a final judgment that would mandate the various payouts outlined in the jury verdict for damages to the trust and to Mac and Bo individually, and for attorney fees, plus a payout of $185,000 to trust beneficiary Bright Divinity School, a nominal party to the suit with which Jim has entered a settlement. The motion further argues that Jim should pay the trust back for attorney fees incurred on its behalf, a total of $1,270,993.96. The defendants, meanwhile, filed a motion to disregard many of the jury's findings. They argue that the court improperly placed the burden of proof on Jim to prove that he fulfilled his duties as trustee, rather than placing the burden of proof on the plaintiff to prove the opposite, and that no legally sufficient evidence supports the finding that Jim breached his fiduciary duty. Jim's lawyers also argue that, contrary to the jury's finding that the Jane White Trust depreciated in value as a result of Jim's actions, the estate increased in value under his management. Jim's lawyers further argue that because the jury did not find that Mac and Bo individually suffered actual damages, Jim should not be asked to pay them monetary damages as individuals. They're asking the court to wire around their failure and to enter a judgment that's not supported by the jury's findings, said Dennis Weitzel, an attorney for Jim White, at Tuesday's hearing. As for damages owed to the Jane White Trust, the defendants argue that because the jury found that the Jane White Trust suffered no material financial loss, Jim should not be asked to pay them damages either. Monetary damages aside, the court is also being asked to make a determination about the future of both the trust and the ranch land. Mac and Bo's attorneys are lobbying for the removal of Jim as trustee of the Jane White Trust and for its division into four separate trusts, one for each of Jane White's four children, Mac, Bo, Jim, and Hester, consisting of equal undivided interests in the estate. This has the effect of giving each sibling the ability to manage their own individual interests and reduce the discord associated with their individual lack of control, reads the plaintiff's motion. They are also requesting the judicial modification of the trust to allow for the sale of the Bright Ranch, a move currently forbidden per the last will and testament of the siblings' great-grandmother, but which the plaintiffs argue would be in keeping with the will's original intent. One of the purposes of this trust was clearly to benefit income for beneficiaries, said Frank Eichard, an attorney for the plaintiff, at Tuesday's hearing. For 13 years, the trustee has not been able to do this. At Tuesday's hearing, McEnbow's attorneys argued that if the modification is granted, and if the trust is divided equally, and the land along with it, each sibling could decide whether or not to sell their portion of the ranch land. Judge Emerson said he would review the motions in the coming days and try to render a judgment as soon as possible. As for the requests, apart from the jury's findings, including the removal of Jim as trustee, the judge directed the attorneys to submit briefings by August 2nd at noon. Give this your best shot. Throw as much mud at the walls as you can, and I'll try to figure it out, said Judge Emerson.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, July 13th, 2023. Fort Stockton School District is Region 18 School Board of the Year. For the second year in a row, the Fort Stockton Independent School District Board of Trustees has earned regional honors. The trustees were recently named Region 18 Outstanding School Board of the Year. This comes on the heels of last year's honor of the Texas Rural Education Association's School Board of the Year. I'm very proud of the FSISD Board of Trustees and the progress they have made in improving our school community, said Superintendent Zamora. This is the second year in a row that they are honored for their efforts. To earn Region 18's honor this year was a chance to compete at the state level is amazing and well-deserved honor for them. This makes the FSISD board the region's nominee to compete at the state level. Out of the 12 districts nominated, 5 will be named honor boards in early August and advance to the state level to compete to be the state's 2023 Outstanding School Board. Zamora said that after being honored by the TREA, the school board doubled down to its efforts to continue academic and all-around improvement. With the advent of STAR accountability in August 2022, the district's campuses earned a passing grade for the first time under the A to F system, and the district earned a B rating despite the challenges of the COVID pandemic. Among the district's accomplishments to earn the honor in 22-23 was the passage of a $103 million bond. In 2022, the school board's relentless efforts to communicate the importance of the million-dollar proposition resulted in a landslide victory that has spurred even faster improvement in all areas. This was accomplished after 2 attempts to pass bonds had failed in recent years. The board initiated a school supply bulk purchase program. It created an approved a revolutionary local pay system that allowed zero-year teachers to earn up to $72,500 salary, starting with qualified seasoned teachers earning significantly more. This has been increased to $75,000 for next year. The innovative pay system allowed the district to finally staff historically hard-to-fill positions. The board purchased a 19-room hotel that was repurposed to allow for affordable housing for professional staff. The rent was set at $250 a month with all bills paid. In an effort to provide virtual instruction and for those that required intensive dropout prevention services, the board spearheaded the opening of a 6th campus in 22-23. This campus also served as host for the first of its kind partnership between Texas Tech K-12 and a Texas public school where FSISD teachers use the Texas Tech K-12 curriculum to teach students. This partnership strategy was developed by FSISD leaders, proposed and finally approved by both respective institutions. Trustees remained focused on improving the safety and security of staff and students, approving a guardian plan for the district, increased the number of school resource officers from 3 to 5, installed ballistic film and key card access at all campuses, and upgraded security cameras. The district launched automotive technology and cosmetology programs in partnership with Midland College. They introduced eSports, where junior high and high school teams both placed top five in the Vantus State competition. Football and tennis made playoff runs, and six state championship medals were earned in track. Improvements have encompassed all areas of district operations, said Zamora. The accomplishments that this team of eight have been able to achieve have been nothing short of miraculous. The school board's policy sets forth a clear mission for the district to guarantee access to quality education, essential for Texas's well-being and preserving citizens' liberties. In addition, recognizing the importance of parental involvement, the board aims to foster strong partnerships between parents and educators, making parents full partners in their children's education. School district to replace marquee message signs. Message signs at each Fort Stockton Independent School District campus will soon be replaced with new, higher resolution signs. The Board of Trustees voted to replace the signs at its June 26th meeting, ultimately opting for the highest resolution sign possible. Three companies submitted bids, and the district chose Arrow Signs of San Angelo, which offered the highest resolution of what the board deemed the best price. The bids were opened at 2 p.m. the day of the school board meeting. What they wanted to do was provide you with what would be the best option, top of the line, but you know, that costs more. Middle of the road, and then the lowest quality of what is acceptable today, said Superintendent Zamora. The board saw three proposals each from the three different companies for each campus. There's a couple of decisions you have to make. First, who's the vendor that you're going with? And then second, when you select a vendor, which resolution are you going to go with? Roy Alvarado said the district wanted to replace all the electronic marquee signs across the district and wanted to replace them with signs that were taller than what exists now. There's nothing wrong with the current infrastructure and what we have. We did a few years ago. We had to do the column. We did the framing and the school logo. All of that is still in relatively good shape. Alvarado recommended replacing the message panels, which are 3 feet by 7 feet for each campus, except the high school, which is 4 by 8. The new signs will be bigger and will be able to display more information. The other consideration Alvarado emphasized was the resolution or image quality of what can be displayed on the sign. That's why you have so many different proposals, because I wanted you all to take those into consideration. The lower end resolution is 13 millimeters, meaning each pixel is 13 millimeters apart, and the board saw one on display outside the administration office during the meeting, provided by Arrow. That one outside is already an improvement to what we have. In addition to 13 mm, the board considered higher resolutions of 9 and even better than 7, which is what the board ultimately chose. That means those dots are going to be really close together, and it's going to look a whole lot more crisp and higher resolution. You could even play video on it. The signs include the software that each school can use to generate the images and text displayed on the signs. We are asking for something more modern, and we're asking for something that is more cloud-based, that is not tied to a specific computer or wired to a specific display. That way, any administrator or assistant can log in to access the signs to change the display or the messaging as needed from just about anywhere. So that was pretty important. Alvarado was also looking for service after the sale. Will the company make repairs if needed? Are they in Texas? He said Arrow had the best price for the signs and has several signs in Fort Stockton. Wallace Lumber and the Fort Stockton Convention Center and the Fort Stockton Community Theater Building. They've already got customers in Fort Stockton. I can see how it would benefit us to get that service that we when we need it. Fort Stockton sending 4 to the Rotary Youth Leadership Awards. Rotary Youth Leadership Awards is an intensive leadership experience organized by Rotary clubs and districts where incoming high school seniors engage in low ropes and high ropes activities and develop skills as leaders while having fun and making connections. The Rotary Club of Fort Stockton sponsors 4 students with a scholarship to attend the week-long camp. This year's camp was from July 9th to the 15th, with another one July 15th to 21. For next year, students can contact the local Rotary Club or any of their members for an application. Those attending this year were Ty Edwards, Michaela Mandahano, Mikhail Bem, Andres Madrid, Gabriel Caballero, and Luke Pules. Mule Deer Foundation hires Rubio as regional director. The Mule Deer Foundation announced that it has hired Demetrio Rubio as the regional director for Western Texas and Eastern New Mexico. He brings more than 10 years of experience as a Mule Deer Foundation chapter chair for the Pecos County chapter in Fort Stockton. He's also well known in his community, not only due to his more than 30 years in local law enforcement, but also for his volunteer work for hunter education and habitat conservation efforts. Rubio replaces Charlie Stockstill, who recently retired. Demetrio represents the passion and energy that we look for to serve our volunteers, said Marshall Johnson. Just visiting with him and learning of his vision of leaving a legacy for his grandchildren tells us that we have the right person to lead the mission of the Mule Deer Foundation in Texas and New Mexico. Over the last few years, MDF have implemented or funded 333 projects that benefited approximately 392,000 acres of habitat treatments and 171 miles of fence, removal, and modification. Funds raised through chapter events play a key role in many of those projects, and in 2022, the organization allocated over $500,000 in chapter rewards funding. In Texas, this included more than $38,000 that was matched for a total of $139,000 to complete 8 projects. Working with the Parks and Wildlife Department, MDF chapters helped with installing guzzlers and solar wells to increase water availability in mule deer country, along with habitat improvements such as brush removal. The organization has also supported migration research in New Mexico. In his role with the foundation, Rubio will work with local volunteer chapters to hold fundraising events in support of the organization's mission, ensuring the conservation of mule deer, black-tailed deer, and their habitat. Although primarily a fundraising position, regional directors also represent the organization with many state and federal agencies, along with other related conservation groups and events. It's a huge honor to have been chosen for this position with an organization and a species that I hold dear to my heart, Rubio said. I look forward to working with the chapters here in Western Texas and New Mexico to help our organization make a difference for mule deer. The same passion I gave to my law enforcement profession for 30 years is what I'm bringing to the position of the regional director. I'm excited to be able to work with all the chapters in different locations in my region and to help promote our work like we have in the town of Fort Stockton. Each chapter is unique in their own way, with chairs that are very committed with the same passion. My whole family is ready and on board to assist in each banquet as they have volunteered since day one 10 years ago. I'm proud to introduce my 2 grandkids and the conservation of mule deer for their future enjoyment. My goal is to educate the public and to grow our membership so that together we can preserve our state's mule deer.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, July 13th. $5.5 million ballpark renovations approved. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward County Commissioners approved spending $5.5 million for the renovation of the county ballparks as well as the construction of a new field. Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms told the court, quote, "This will be a great improvement for our ballparks. The newest field out there was built in 1967. We want the parks to be accessible for all our visitors, which, during the 10 to 11 months of use, can number up to 2,000 people a night. The ground is rocky and uneven. There's no paths to walk on, much less support the use of a walker or wheelchair." End quote. Fair Metal Buildings, out of Seminole, was awarded the contract for the project with a low bid of $4.4 million. Presently, there are four larger baseball fields and two T-ball fields. The new layout will have four larger fields and three mid-range fields. One of the three mid-range fields will be a T-ball coach pitch field for the youngest players. Quote, "The new field will be located west of Park 2 and south of Park 4. The new layout will be a more efficient use of the area," Nelm said. "All facilities will be leveled and rebuilt, stands, dugouts, etc. An extra concession stand and extra restrooms will be added to the new field complex. The renovations will include handrails, ramps, concrete walk paths, and improvements in the stands, as well as a 2-acre asphalt parking lot. Park 6, the large ball field, will not be included in the renovations at this time. Its renovations are scheduled for Phase 2. This field is currently used for pony baseball and adult games." Quote, "This is a good bid," Nelms added. Fair Metal Buildings representatives Willie Fair and Ronnie Friesen said they're expecting completion of the renovations before next baseball season kicks off around March of 2024. Commissioners approved spending $7.5 million on hospital renovations. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward County Commissioners met on Monday and approved awarding a bid of $12.9 million for the hospital Med-Surg patient rooms renovations. The renovations were stalled last month after bids received exceeded the allotted budget amount of approximately $13 million. The bid was recommended by the Vandergrift Group Architects, the hospital's architect, and went to J.C. Roberts Construction. Ward County Judge Greg Holly told the court, quote, "Leticia Rodriguez acquired $3 million through grants, and the county already put in $1.5 million, which was included in last year's budget, and the county will contribute another $7.5 million out of this year's budget, bringing the total investment to $11 million. Rodriguez is currently inquiring about an additional $1 million grant from the United States Department of Agriculture, and the hospital will make up any difference remaining for the project," end quote. All 25 patient rooms, which were originally semi-private with shared bathroom showers, will be included in the renovation project, Rodriguez said. "The patient rooms will be updated and the bathrooms will be private with its own shower. Also included is the nurse's station, the records area, a medicine dispensary, and the air conditioning. All the renovations will be compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act." In other business, the commissioners also appointed tax assessor collector Vicki Heflin to calculate no new revenue tax rate and voter approval tax rate, which will remain at 55 cents per parcel. Quote, "We don't need to raise the amount because we have more taxpayers in Ward County now," Holly said. The court also approved an agreement with Permian Basin Regional Planning Commission for enhanced 911 services in the region, which entails the mapping of all the small towns and areas in the county, as well as a 2-year contract with Pritchard and Abbott for tax collecting software and hardware. In final actionable items, the commissioners approved a change order from Cox Paving for seal coating Precinct 1 roads. Quote, "The change order was for an additional $260,000 above the original cost," Holly said. Also approved were contracts with all the county cities, the schools, for tax collection services. In regular business, commissioners approved bills, including Ward County Payroll Fund, inquest, autopsies, county clerk supplies, total jail expenses, Ward Memorial Indigent Health Care, Ward Event Center repair and maintenance, Ward County golf course construction. All commissioners were present for the Monday meeting. For Precinct 1, Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2, Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3, Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4, Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and County Judge Greg Holly. The next regularly scheduled commissioners meeting will be July 24th at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen Street. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. City Council allocates $917,000 in HOT funds. District 1 council member begins term. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Newly appointed District 1 council member Gerald Stava was present for Tuesday's regularly scheduled council meeting along with council members Calvin Carroll, Jeppy Wilson, Richard Hawkins, Ivy Valenzuela, Mayor Adam Steen, City Manager Rex Thee, and City Attorney Justin Till. Stava was sworn in by City Secretary Tanya Todd before the budget workshop meeting on July 5th. He was appointed to the post on June 27th after council members opted to fill the vacancy by appointment. Stava will fill Rudy Hernandez's unexpired term, which ends May 2024. If Stava chooses to remain as council member, he will need to be elected to the seat. Any citizens who live within District 1 and want to run for the position can do so by filing for the seat beginning January 17th. Candidates must be a U.S. citizen, a resident of Monahans, qualified to vote, be a bona fide taxpayer, and cannot hold another public office or employment. After establishing a quorum and approving previous minutes, City Council officially approved the allocation of $917,000 of this year's Hotel Occupancy Tax Fund, or HOT funds, with 9 entities selected to receive the monies. Funding available in the HOT funds as of June 16th is $2 million, and the city used $679,000 of the HOT funds last fiscal year. The council heard requests from Chamber of Commerce Director Teresa Burnett and Ward County Judge Greg Holly for the Million Barrel Museum and Ward County Event Center during the last council meeting. Burnett told the council that her proposed budget was more than last year's budget, quote, because of inflation, the money requested last year did not cover all events, end quote. The chamber requested approximately $216,000, around $35,000 increase over last year's amount, which includes money to partially offset administration expenses, as well as for advertising and support of events, bringing new events to town and help grow the community. Ward County Judge Greg Holly told councilmen that the county did not want to compete with any other entity, but if funds were sufficient, they have requested $500,000 for the event center and $50,000 to help fund the Million Barrel Museum complex. The request includes a $100,000 increase for the event center to help offset the cost to run the event center. Holly said it costs around $1 million to run the event center per year, and the rental fees total around $75,000, which is less than 10% of what it actually costs to operate the facility. Ward County Golf Association is requesting $40,000 to $100,000 to help with chemicals and tournaments. Council unanimously approved the recommendations for the distribution of funding for the fiscal year as follows: up to $50,000 for the museum complex, Ward County, up to $216,000 to the Monahans Chamber of Commerce, up to $2,500 for the airport fly-in, up to $7,000 for sundry administration, $65,000 projects events, $12,000 City of Monahans Museum Historical Arts, $25,000 City of Monahans existing sports facilities and fields, and $500,000 for the Ward County Event Center infrastructure activities, and $40,000 for historical restoration and preservation. In second readings, council members approved repealing Ordinance 1157, which closed the 700 block of North Carroll Street next to Sudreth Elementary to traffic in order to allow school buses to pick up and drop off kids. The ordinance was adopted March 27, 2012. Quote, Sudreth Elementary has been permanently closed, and the school informed us they are fine with the ordinance being lifted and the street being open. And to do that, we have to repeal the previous ordinance, Thee said. Since approved by council, city crews will now remove any signs and street markings on the street, but the street will remain a school zone. In other actionable items, a grazing pasture lease between the city and Chief of Police Billy Riley was also approved by the council. Thee said, quote, this is a grazing lease for an area in and around the landfill that the city owns. Mr. Riley has had the grazing lease for several years, end quote. The lease states Riley will pay the city $8 per month per head of livestock with a minimum of 20 head. Any additional livestock will be prorated per month per head with a maximum of 50 head. Council members convened in executive session at the end of the meeting to discuss appointments to the Planning and Zoning Board terms ending July 31, 2023, two members and one alternate. After reconvening into regular session, Thee said council members decided to appoint Blake Heflin and Rudy Sesteta to the P&Z Board. An alternate will be appointed during the next meeting. Heflin and Sesteta will replace outgoing members Billy Neance and Gerald Carlson. Heflin and Sesteta's terms will end on July 31, 2025. Members of the P&Z Board beginning on August 1 will be as follows: Mickey Mitchell, Joni King, Chris Lynn Neas, Blake Heflin, and Rudy Sesteta. Appointments are subject to the acceptance of the appointee. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The Council will meet again on July 25th in the Council Chambers of City Hall, located at 112 West 2nd Street at 3 p.m. The meeting is open to the public. 21-year-old killed in Friday rollover. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A 21-year-old Monahans man was killed following a two-vehicle crash on the north side of I-20 service road last Friday night. At 7:15 p.m. on July 7th, Albert Sotelo of Monahans was driving eastbound in the 200 block of Interstate 20 service road near Main Street in a 1996 Chevrolet 1500, while Landon Colston of Monahans was driving a 2013 GMC pickup westbound, also on the service road. According to Monahans Police Department Chief of Police Christopher Quintana, quote, Sotelo was attempting to turn north onto the 1800 block of South Main Street from the service road and failed to yield the right-of-way to Colston and struck him near the driver's side front quarter panel. The force of the crash caused Colston to be ejected and the truck to roll. the truck came to rest off the roadway near the Double D storage buildings, he added. Colston was transported to Ward Memorial Hospital by Ward County EMS, where he later succumbed to his injuries. Sotelo was also transported to the hospital to be treated for minor injuries. No citations were issued, and the investigation into the crash is still ongoing, he added. Project to widen Highway 18 set to begin Monday. Beginning Monday, July 17th, road construction will begin on a rehabilitation program for Highway 18 extending from Business I-20 to the Winkler County line. The project consists of rehabilitation of existing roadway to include pavement rehabilitation, adding passing lanes, ditch regrade, curb and gutter, sidewalks, ADA ramps, illumination, and signing and pavement markings. FNF Construction was awarded the bid for this project, estimated to cost $33 million. For additional information, contact Mary Ann Cedillo at maryann.cedillo@techstot.gov or telephone 432-498-4746. Hospital orders pine trees removed. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward Memorial Hospital Board of Managers met Thursday for their regularly scheduled meeting, and after a quorum was established, absent managers recognized, and the previous meeting's minutes were approved, the board heard a proposal to remove several pine trees from the hospital property from WMH Administrator and CEO Leticia Rodriguez. Quote, "We have 9 to 10 large and medium pine trees that have died or are dying that need to be removed, as they pose a risk of falling over on the hospital or vehicles in the parking lot. The dying trees have also shed needles and have made a thick layer of dead needles that are compromising the efficiency of the Duralast roof installed on the hospital a few years ago," she said. Innovative Services, locally owned and operated by Will Magura, was awarded a contract for the tree removal with a submitted bid of $47,000. The bid includes removal of the trees, the crane needed to remove the trees from the interior courtyard, disposal, cleanup of the trees, and the roof and power washing the roof. Magura said, quote, "We will cut the trees down and into pieces, run the pieces through a mulching machine, treat the stumps to kill them, and clean the roof," end quote. "Once the mulch is ready, it will be available free of charge to anyone who wants them." Magura can be reached at 290-9821, and he will deliver it. In other business, the hospital board considered and acted on accepting a bid from J.C. Roberts Construction Company, who was recommended by the Vandergrift Group Architects to begin the renovations to the Med-Surg nursing unit at the hospital. The bid was for $12,987,000, with a completion schedule of 580 days. In regular business, the board approved paying the monthly bills, including Ward County Payroll Fund, payroll deductions, Empower, a retirement plan provider, Thursday bills, insurance deductions, and Monday bills. Quote, "The second farmers market will be held this Saturday at Hill Park starting at 8:30 a.m. and going until 12:30 p.m. 23 vendors displaying crafts, food, homemade treats, and fresh produce have confirmed being there, along with hospital lab booths, EMS, and fire trucks." The budget amendment was approved in a separate action. No citizens were there to be heard, no new personnel, and no credentialing. Present for the meeting were managers Lisa Stewart, Frank Heslin, Angel Fuentes, Gerald Carlson, John Fawcett, and Boyd Barron. Absent from the meeting were Jeff Burdick and Mickey Mitchell. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be July 20th at 6:15 p.m. in the hospital's Physical Therapy and Cardiac Unit boardroom at 420 South Ike Street. The hospital board meets every first and third Thursday of the month at 6:15 p.m. Anyone who would like to address the board about any concerns needs to contact Administrator CEO Leticia Rodriguez at 943-2511, extension 176, to explain their concern and ask to be placed on the next board meeting agenda.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.